And now it's time for the TOT Cast with your hosts, Chris Okranitz and Ryan Greco. And welcome to the TOT Cast, brought to you by the Fansided Network and here at tipofthetower.com. I am Ryan Greco, and I'm joined by my two wonderful co-hosts, Chris Okranitz and Atea J. If you have any questions for us, be sure to always reach us on Twitter. You can reach me at RyanGreco416. You can reach Chris Okranitz at Chris Okranitz, and you can always reach Atea J at Tay11_. And always be sure to like our Facebook page, Tip of the Tower. You got a question for the show? Be sure to hit us up on Twitter at Tip of the Tower. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Chris?
Doing pretty well, can't complain. Excited for our guest later on in the show here. How about yourself, Matei?
How'd I say, not too good.
Oh, yeah, you guys lost yesterday, isn't that right?
Yeah, we did, so.
Sorry about
it. I'm not in the best mood, but, you know, I'm here and, you know, excited to talk to Bob, who we have on later, and you know, be here with you guys. Mm-hmm. Ryan, how you doing?
I am extremely excited for our guest on the TOT Cast this week. We have the one and only, not just Canadian Hall of Famer, we're talking about a legit baseball Hall of Famer.
In Cooperstown.
He's in Cooperstown, that's right.
It's a pretty big deal.
He is a big deal.
One of the nicest guys, too.
Absolutely. Chris, who do we have on the show later on today?
We got Toronto Sun and longtime beat writer for the Toronto Blue Jays, Mr. Bob Elliott, who's a near and dear friend of mine, and we all got a good chance to talk to him, and I can't say enough. It's still kind of surprising that he came on to talk with us.
So he's been covering the Blue Jays for, what, 20 years?
I think a little bit longer, actually. Oh, yeah. I think since, 80?
So he knows all those little things that, you know, people don't really get to...
Yeah, he's privy to all the access with the Jays. Okay. He's got
access. I'm excited.
So, he's going to have some great things for us, so I'm excited to see what he's got to say.
Yep, looking forward to having him a little bit later. All right, so, gentlemen, We're still here after 3 weeks. We still exist. I'm personally extremely happy about that. I don't know about you guys. But, you know, in our first 3 weeks of our show, we've actually failed to mention possibly the most popular team in all of Toronto. Do you guys know who that might be?
Well, I think that's actually the Toronto Babcocks.
The Babcocks.
Or the Toronto Amarillos. Or somebody in upper management. I mean, they're worth more than what's on the ice right now.
That's
what we're talking about, no? The Leafs?
Are we talking about the Leafs, Ryan?
I think we are definitely talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. So,
tank for Matthews.
Oh, man. Going so far into this season, it really has been what we've expected. And to be perfectly honest, that's really why we haven't discussed much about the Leafs. We all knew that they weren't going to be very good this year. We all knew that Mike Babcock, like the biggest news that has happened with the Leafs has all been in their offseason. And I doubt we're going to have any other bigger storylines to talk about than the hiring of Mike Babcock this season. But seeing that it is Toronto.
Well, the narrative's kind of been the rebuild, right?
Exactly.
It's also, can we sustain this scorched earth approach that we've never done before?
Right. And one thing that's really helped the Leafs is having the Blue Jays go on the run that they went on.
Yeah.
Kind of put them on the back burner and didn't have kind of the all eyes on them kind of thing. That's usually what goes on.
Well, who would have thought Mike Babcock's first win with the Leafs would go untalked about?
Right.
Like a couple weeks ago when it happened, when they opened the season and they won in Columbus, the Jays were
right
in the playoffs and nobody gave a rip that the Leafs won. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, that team's playing.
Right, right.
Which is bizarre in this city.
It is, but it's just what they needed in this year.
Yeah, so I think that's something that can definitely help them going forward. But for the time being, they kind of got a little bit of an issue if you want to call it that. James Reimer's been pretty hot. There's been a recent resurgence of the Prime Minister of Defense. And
I love that name.
Is he going to be the guy going forward over Bernier? Or people have been saying, get rid of Bernier?
One of the biggest questions that's now came apart in Leafland is that exact reason, is the fact that Bernier playing so terribly. And Reimer, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about how Reimer straight up lost the job to Bernier when they were coming out of training camp. What was it, about 2 years ago, was it, Chris?
Yeah, about that. I mean, he's lost it and won it a couple times and then was leaving and staying, and it's been a circus with him. Sometimes I do kind of feel bad for him, but that's part of being a professional goalie in a hockey-crazed market like Toronto.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, a lot of people, there's even been some whispers in the media talking about the idea of, because Reimer's playing so well right now, that should they even re-sign Bernier at the end of the season? And to hear something like that, to be perfectly honest, just makes me laugh, because, you know, we're not even at the quarter post of the season
yet.
That's
what I was thinking. It's kind of too early to, you know, start thinking about that. You got to let the season kind of unfold, and, you know, the storylines would kind of write itself. You know, it's way too early right now.
Well, I think something that's really affected him is arbitration. Nate, you mentioned how it's an ugly process. Yeah. You've been with the Argos. You haven't had to go through that process yet, but you said there's some stories of guys where it kind of ruins their psyche a bit. Do you think that's something that Bernier's suffering from?
Right. Like, so he went through arbitration last summer, and you basically sit there, and the team is telling you all the reasons why they don't want to give you the amount of money that you're asking for. And that could be tough, for especially for a young player, to hear that from, you know, a team that, you know, guys that, you know, are part of your management group. So I feel like he's kind of suffering from that, you know, from a psyche standpoint, where, you know, he's kind of been, you know, talked down upon. Obviously, when after he signs, they love you again, and they you know, they want to tell you why you're great. But, you know, that stuff can stick with you for a while if you're, you know, you're sensitive.
It's got to be pretty rough though to get shredded by a team that was as bad as the Leafs.
Exactly. Like, it's not like getting shredded by a team like Detroit. You know what I mean? Or, you know, one of the top teams in the league, like a Chicago. You're getting shredded by the Leafs. You know, so
yeah, a team that was in transition too.
Right. So it's tough.
It's unbelievable, and it's crazy to think that there are even some people that are calling to not keep either of the goaltenders, as if they're the reason why this team isn't very good. It's a sad thing.
Yeah.
The team's just not good, period. But, I mean, if you're looking down the road, a guy like Anton Bilbo, the prospect they have with the Marlies, maybe he's going to be the future, because this Bernier, Reimer, are they really going to be here by the time the team's good? Probably not.
Who knows?
But that's still a ways down the road.
You would hope so with Reimer, though, because both of these guys are, you know, they're only in their mid-20s, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like it's completely up in the air right now. Like I said, the reason this team has just not been very compelling is because they just haven't been very good. And there's really, now with Phil Kessel gone, there's really no other really person to point the finger at.
There's no talent on the ice. I mean, that's what they're lacking. A guy like Morgan Riley is exciting to watch because he's young, he's upcoming. People like to throw on the Scott Niedermayer comparison or some other some hefty comparisons for him right now. And yes, he can grow into that, but aside from him, what do we really have to watch on the ice? I don't know about you guys, but nobody's getting excited to go watch Bozak or Lupo. Kadri's our best forward right now, according to Babcock. But
the thing is, they are putting together like good efforts. They're playing hard. They're not just putting together like a horrible effort on the ice, right? So that's what you look for.
Did they get oranges at halftime and stuff too? For the whole we played hard.
But yeah. Juice boxes,
right?
Seriously,
in a transition like this, you just look for you know, effort, right? Are they trying? Are they buying into the system? And if they're doing that, I'm okay with that. You know, they're not going to be great. You knew that. They only changed the coach. They didn't really change the product on the ice. But as long as they're buying in, and early reports have it, they're buying into the back-off system, they're going to get better. It's only a matter of time.
Well, maybe they're playing hard to get the heck out of here.
Yeah. There you go. Well, just like those players busting their asses trying to get out of here, I think we can get out of this topic. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much to say. It'll be fun to talk about the Leafs as we progress into the season. Trade deadline will be fun.
It's still pretty early. Yeah. They've been playing better late, but it's still pretty early, I'd say.
It's over, man. It's over. I'm sorry. I had to break it to you.
Sorry.
We're building for the next 2 years here.
Yep.
Let's just hope we commit to it.
Listeners, we tried. There's your Leafs talk.
At least we know we got the right man on top of this team. You know, Team Canada head coach.
Well, if he can stay, man. I don't know if they've dumped enough dollars to keep somebody here of his stature to lose.
Gave him 50 million reasons.
50.
You hope? 50.
Yeah. A 50 burger.
That takes a crap on Urban Meyer's salary. Are you kidding me right now?
That just shows you how desperate we were.
Yeah.
I hope it works out, you know.
And while moving on from one team that calls the ACC home that doesn't have a hope in hell in making the playoffs, we will move on to another team, their roommates, if you will, that have every reason to make the playoffs and once again challenging for another division title, and that's in the Toronto Raptors. And they got off to a hot start at 5-0, but recently they're at 1-3 and cooled down a little bit. Gentlemen, your thoughts on the team moving forward, and the tough tests that they've been facing all November. It's been mostly a road schedule. I've always made the argument during this month that it was a really good learning experience for these guys to get on the road and really mesh together in the way that they have, even if they don't come out of it with a winning record. I think that this team is more than capable of bouncing back. Your thoughts?
For the time being, the Raptors, I think they're in a good spot. You know, it's a long season. They've been on the road a lot. You know, it's nothing to panic about. I know they lost against Sacramento in a tough down the stretch game, but it's nothing to panic about. They're still winning the Atlantic.
Boogie!
Boogie went crazy. Boogie went crazy. And that's what happens when you have a bona fide superstar. You know, you can just give them the ball and watch them work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they were caught by that, and a little, they faded a little bit down the stretch, but... Yeah. You know, they're going to be fine. It's a long season, and Atlantic is weak. So, you know, it's good that they work out all their little kinks now, and you know, mm-hmm. it'll pay off later. I'm still very impressed by this team, to be honest with you. Like, what do you guys think?
Seeing Jonas Valanciunas develop has been a promising sign for the Raptors so far. I mean, the team as a whole hasn't been too bad. It hasn't been too great. They've been okay. You know, they haven't done anything too extraordinary, but they're developing. They're
coming along. I got a question. Do you think at this point, with you know, the additions to you know, the defense side of the ball, are they more equipped to win a playoff series, or maybe two, than they were last year?
I think they are.
I'd say absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking this year they might have less wins, but their prospects for winning in the playoffs are much better. So
why would they have less wins though?
I'm saying they might have less wins. Because last year they had guys coming off the bench to score, Vasquez, Lou Will, that could just score, you know, win you game. But this year they may not have that same firepower, but they have better players to win in the playoffs.
Well, because
they do little things right. What do you think about that?
Once DeMarre Carroll gets healthy, it's gonna change a lot of things.
He's not even fully healthy right now. He's getting a foot injury.
Yeah, and right now one of the most exciting things for us to watch is seeing Corey Joseph and Kyle Lowry play together.
Right.
They've been dynamic. It's kind of interesting to see Casey's trust build in Joseph. He's kind of became a rock or a guy that he can lean on.
Right.
And 17 points against Sacramento.
And it's not even just the points. It's the leadership. It's the defense. It's guarding the other team's best guard, you know what I mean? Yep. And taking him out the game, you know what I mean? And just that relentless pressure on defense. It's very impressive to watch. And you can tell he's been coached up really well.
Yeah, even when you were talking about with Kyle Lowry, he had quite a few glowing things to say about Joseph so far early in the season. Things such as the fact that Joseph, he even went as far to say that Joseph could score at will right now. He was also talking about the fact that he has the ability to be a defensive player of the year type season if he continues the way he's going. And he's also realizing the fact that, you know, in San Antonio, a lot of his movement, a lot of what he was doing on the court was to set up other players such as Tony Parker, Tim Duncan. There were so many options there.
Right.
But when he's here, they're allowing him the opportunity to score. They're allowing him the opportunity to bring up his offensive game. And we're seeing that in spades, like I said earlier, with the 17 points. We knew we were going to get assists. We knew we were going to get defense. But this added scoring touch has been a welcome surprise.
Yeah, and I'm going to go as far as to say, I'm calling it right now, he's going to show people parts of his game that's never been seen before.
Because
Toronto is not San Antonio where you're loaded from top to bottom and you have a limited role. He has a way bigger role this year, and he's going to be asked to do a lot more. And, you know, people are going to be pleasantly surprised by, you know, how much he grows. Because, you know, being expected to score and having a bigger role, it forces you to grow as a player. And, you know, having the trust and the confidence from the coaches is gonna be huge for him.
And I think seeing that type of growth and the way that these guys are playing together, even in losses, is more than enough reason for fans not to panic.
Oh, yeah.
Not to get worried.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're 1-3 right now, but let's face it. This is going to be, I bet you, this is going to be their toughest road trip the entire season.
Yeah, 1-3 in their last four.
Yeah, exactly. And they've been facing a couple of playoff teams that we're all expecting to see in the playoffs the last five games or so. And then going on the road and seeing all of the difficult games that they still have ahead of them, and they're going to be on the road pretty much for the rest of November too. So even if they come out of this sub 500, this is no time to panic. This team is already showing better signs than what it was showing last year near the end of the season. Because keep in mind, these guys were struggling hard at the end of last season.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason why they never got the 50 wins.
Right. Lowry was hurt too pretty much down the stretch.
Yeah, that's right.
Gave up.
Yep.
Well, the next time they are home, though, they're playing the Cavs, and it's going to be Drake night. Did you guys see the new OVO stuff that came out today?
I did.
What did y'all think?
I have to say, I love it. I mean, that stuff looks golden. It's Drake definitely knows what he's doing, and you know, I definitely need to get to that Drake store and pick up some of that stuff because it's pretty good.
Where is that store?
I have no idea.
Do you know Ryan?
I'm gonna Google Maps it.
What is it? Like Queen West?
I know
downtown.
The OVO store.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna Google Maps that, and I'll be there. You'll see me next week with some of that.
You're gonna get your Instagram game on it.
You already know. But yo, no, honestly, that stuff looks pretty good. I mean, everything he touches, from the jerseys to, you know, Drake Knight to everything he's doing with the ambassador of the team, you know, he's doing a really good job. And I'm excited what he's going to do for All-Star. That's something that, you know, nobody's really talking about. It's going to be,
I think we got some pretty exclusive stuff. Well, Ryan was saying a couple weeks ago that he guarantees they're going to be OVO colored All-Star uniforms.
Wow, for both teams.
Yeah, he thinks it's going to be like
absolutely
OVO Fest Winter Edition.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Here's the thing to remember right now. That owl, that Drake owl, is more recognizable of a brand and a logo than the Raptors' new logo.
Right, right.
Like, that's something that I think nobody wants to admit. No one wants to really say out loud, especially in the Raptors organization. But it's also part of the reason why, even on one of the shirts, you see that the owl logo is actually right there, and the Raptors logo is nowhere to be found. It just says Toronto Basketball on it. And yet it still has the NBA logo on the sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that he's sitting here and he's able to legitimately market his brand along with an NBA logo aside it, and also Mitchell and Ness, something that has been near and dear to many hip-hop fans' hearts for at least the last 20 years, with all the throwback jerseys that we all used to wear back in the day, or a 3 and 4 XLs. I know I had one.
I still got them. I can't fit in any of them now.
Dude, even the Raiders with NWA stuff back in the day.
Oh, my God, yeah. So it's just, you know, the fact that, you know, this is just a guy who clearly understands the temperature of the room.
He gets it.
Say. But, you know, I'm all for it.
The only person I think that doesn't like him right now is Meek Mill.
Who?
That's it. Who? Yeah. Who?
Who?
The ARM? Going from two teams that are in season to a team that's out of season but is still very relevant in the news, everything that's going on.
They're still running ish.
We'll move into the Toronto Blue Jays here, especially considering the guest we have later on, Mr. Bob Elliott.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, free agency. They just finished qualifying offers last Friday. Now you're going to start to see more guys start signing and a little more action on the free agent market. What do you guys think is going to happen with the Jays this offseason?
I got a list of stuff that I would love to see happen. I mean, first, I would love to see David Price back. I don't know if that'll happen. That's just
I don't know. It all depends on payroll, right? I mean, there's been conflicting reports in terms of, like Bob said earlier last week, that they're going to cut payroll.
Right.
And then Bob McCown said they're going to really cut payroll.
Really?
Yeah, he said they were going to cut it all the way down to as far as 30% less.
They got to keep this momentum up, you know.
Well, then Shai Davidi and Rick Westhead said that it's going to be anywhere from the same, which would be about $130 to $140 million, to higher.
So I'll go with the Silverbacks on this one.
Management has to understand, like, the reason why they were having sold-out games was because they, you know, kind of spent money. They went all in and brought players in. They went for it. And, you know, they saw a return on their investments with the fans coming out like never before seen. So I feel like, you know, we can't go back to the old way. We're kind of in too deep now. So if it was up to me, we got to keep this momentum up. We got to keep spending and take advantage of this window that we have. I'm actually excited to see what Bob has to say about, you know, the changes he would like to see, what he would add, because, you know, he's in the know, right?
Yeah, and I mean, like, to kind of go back to saying that it's exciting what the Jays have done this year, this is the first time in, I think, all of our lives that it was exciting to go to the Rogers Center.
Oh,
it was exciting to watch the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at the ratings they were drawing this
year. I was watching games, like, I've been a fan all year, but I was watching games when, you know, even after they clinched, just to see what the bench players were going to do. You know what I mean? There was so much excitement around the team that, you know, you just didn't want to turn them off. I was listening to Blue Jays talk after the games. You know what I mean? Watching the pregame show. You know what I mean? It was a lot of fun. And it would be like a season that I've never seen before. So, you know, they have to keep it up.
Yep.
You guys think they go in and get a pitcher, or are they going to kind of roll with what they have and hope guys like Hutchinson bounce back?
It's obvious they have to get a pitcher. You know, we have more than enough offense, right? They have to. What do you think, Ryan? Pitcher?
They have to, but they probably won't.
Yeah.
The only reason I say that is just because, one, it's Rogers. They'll find a way to
up. The thing is, they got Estrada back. That was big. You know
Estrada,
what I mean?
They got him on good terms.
They got him on good terms.
Look, Estrada did very well. Estrada, at his very best, he's going to be a number two starter.
Middle rotation guy, right?
It will be a middle rotation guy. If we're talking about guys that can really shut it down, guys that are, you know.
There aren't very many of those guys, though. That's the thing.
Look, I'm sorry. Rogers is going to find a way to screw this up, because they've already screwed it up with Alex Anthopoulos. They've already screwed it up with what they were doing with Beeston even back then. So if they can't get their front office in order, I don't know.
No, but
I honestly don't see how they're going to be able
I
to
really
get the
Anthopoulos momentum left,
with the, what
but
they have
they,
on the
they
field.
Got the,
it's
they
just
got,
no.
They got the,
it's not going to happen.
They got the vice general manager back. They got the, all the coaches back. It's pretty much
right hand man.
Right.
They did lose some scouts too.
They did.
Yeah.
It's pretty much. But to me, it's pretty much the same coaching
staff. They don't appreciate
staff.
The wins, man. They appreciate the bottom line. And you know what?
They're I would too. If
they're
I was
fair
Rogers.
Weather. They're fair weather, man. That's what happens when you got your portfolio all tied up and it's a bottom line thing. It's not necessarily about the product on the field. Oh, look, it's winning now. This means we're making some more money. Let's. What do we do here? I really question their commitment.
Absolutely.
I really question their commitment. I mean, I just think it's terrible. I mean, Toronto sports as a whole is just another notch on the belt for us.
I've got a question for both of you guys, and I actually got a question for anybody, for everybody out there listening as well. Mark Shapiro has been marketed by Rogers, both through Sportsnet and both through the Blue Jays organization, as the greatest thing since sliced bread. They've given him ample airtime to explain his case. They've given him ample airtime to discuss what it is that he wants to do with himself. What was he in charge of for 16 years?
He's been there for a long time. You got to keep in mind, I won't be too quick to kind of take a dump on Shapiro.
I don't think he's a bad person. I'm just talking about what has he done to show for it.
Very, very savvy baseball
mind. I don't have
he's been to two World Series. He's been to three or four ALCSs. He's built up quite a farm system they've had there. He's even been able to get guys. Like, keep in mind, if you want to go all the way back to
the thing is, the Blue Jays hired a lot.
Don't let the recency bias of what Cleveland's done or Cleveland sports narrative as a whole
payroll either.
He's always worked at the bare minimum.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing about the Blue Jays is they hired a search firm. You know, I mean, they put money into the search firm to find the best guy for the job, and that's what they came up with.
Search firms are horrendous, man. That's just lazy. Yeah, because what does a search firm know about the culture of your actual city? They just come in, they look around, they don't know anything about the culture, the immersion of what the organization is. It's just an independent firm that comes in and does, well, this is best off this.
But I'm saying he was identified by somebody as somebody trusted as the number one guy for this job. So there are people out there that believe in him.
Who that front office trust scares me.
Well, he's extremely savvy as a baseball person.
Right.
But to kind of piggyback what off Ryan was saying about how the front office scares him, it scares me too, because when they took over, they had no clue what they were doing. They were going to hang out with Randy Levy and the Yankees. They were going to L.A. They wanted to kind of learn
how Rogers?
Ed Rogers. They want to see how baseball worked.
Yeah.
And how to basically run. Yeah, they want to learn how to run a franchise.
Right.
Look, why are you going to the Yankees? They're in your own division, or why are you going to go find out from somebody else?
Right.
You got
do your homework.
Well, that, and you got Paul Beeson there, who's been with the organization since it started. Why don't you go ask in your own backyard how the team works first, before going to guys like arch rivals like the Yankees?
Right.
Why don't you go to Boston? Why don't you go ask them what you should do in free agency too, or if you guys want to pick a player A or B? Or it's just, if you're going to take on something, it bothers me because we kind of overlook the responsibility you have as an owner.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And a gentleman who can answer all of these questions and more is our guest for the TOT cast this week, creator of the Canadian Baseball Network, Toronto Sun baseball writer, the pride of Kingston, Ontario, and Hall of Famer, Mr. Bob Elliott. Sir, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
So it was a wild end of the summer for the Blue Jays. What was it like seeing Paul Beeson down the stretch, knowing this was his last year? How was he around the team and the whole environment?
Well, he was enjoying it. You know, they were in first place. It was certainly exciting baseball. They were down 2-0 against Texas and then came back, tied it up, and won the bat flip game. And then they were down 3-1 to Kansas City, and they came back and won the first one. And I would say first and third, nobody out. You should be able to have a 9-1 and 2 coming up. You should be able to get a ball in play. They didn't get a ball in play until it was two out. Navarro struck out, Revere struck out, and then Donaldson grounded out. But you know that old line about there's a strikeout's the same as an out? I don't believe that. I mean, they get a fly ball there, and Navarro hits a fly ball, they head to extras, and who knows what happens.
Do you have any examples or stories about Beeston during the playoff stretch? Or even Anthopoulos?
No, he was Beeson is a very he's not like Steinbrenner or he's kind of like Bronfman when I covered the Expos. He's not around that much. Spring training, he's there once a year and for their banquet, their end of the season banquet, and he's there every night, but he rolls in like, I don't know, bottom of the first as soon as he gets off the phone or whatever, and then he sits, he and Howard Starkman, they sit in a bunker like Harold Ballard and King Clancy, and they, you know, sometimes Cito Gasson's in there, sometimes Devon White or George Bell, or sometimes it's just the two of them, but no, I don't have, I did see him in, he was on the road both in Arlington and Kansas City. He saw me and he turned to this guy from New York, from the New York Post, and he said, hey, George King. He said, George, why don't you come back on the charter with us? You know, this is after game two. And George said, are you nuts? I got it going right. And Beeson says, well, that's why I asked you. I knew you couldn't come. And to bother Elliot, he could see me coming. You know, he knew I would hear him ask. But the writers haven't been on the charters, I think, since whatever Tim Johnson's last year was, whatever year that was, 98, 99, Clemens' first year here. Yeah.
I just want to ask you, what's the one thing you remember about this 2015 season?
I don't know. One thing? Man, that's a tough one. I guess, the easy one would be to say the bat flip or something. I just think the enthusiasm around the park, you know, like a couple of times. I went down to meet people that were here from Kingston. Another buddy from Kitchener was here, and I went outside, you know, half an hour before first pitch, where I'm not usually there, and you know, everybody's dressed in blue, and, you know, the enthusiasm and the excitement, it wasn't like that in 92, it wasn't like that in 93, it wasn't like that in 1985, and it was such a young crowd. It was, I think that would be the thing, because, I mean, when they moved into the Sky Dome in 89, in June, there was a story, I think it was in the Star, that their average age of the fans was 52 or 54 or something like that. No way. The average age now is probably about 28. Yeah. So I think that would be the one memory, because that's so sustainable, whereas Batista's was one at bat, or Donaldson's walk-offs were one at bat here, one at bat there.
When you were watching that seventh inning, given everything, the events that happened, what was your first impression when they had the torched call at the top half of the inning? And have you ever seen Blue Jay fans react like that with such force between throwing stuff on the field and the heavy booing and things of that nature? Have you ever seen anything like that happen in the Sky Dome before?
No, I've never seen anything like that before. Think of that line, stay classy, San Diego, you know? Like, we really didn't look too good, I don't think, if you were watching, sitting on your chair in, I don't know, San Francisco or Omaha, Nebraska or someplace. You, what are these guys? It was like a soccer crowd or something. They were looking, somebody just got a red card, I think, or a yellow, whatever. They were so irate. The conspiracy theory was that Bannister was the catching coach with Pittsburgh last year, and Martin was there last year. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people thought, well, maybe Bannister picked that up, that Martin dropped to one knee, and then he threw it after he looked the runner back to third. And Cho has this habit of using his left hand to tug on his right elbow and sticking the bat out. But I talked to Martin about it, and Martin said he was never warned about it, and he's never had it happen once. And, you know, it's not like it'd be like something like the yips and throw the ball over the pitcher's head with a mid guy on third. Who was that? Oh, Dale Murphy. And they moved him to center field, and, you know, he won the MVP back-to-back years. There was never any warnings or anything like that, according to Martin. But there was a lot of venom in the park. That's, you know, and then whatever it was 25 minutes later. Oh, the part I enjoyed was later, was Sam Dice ripping everybody, the guy that gave up the home run, and he says, you know, Batista's an idiot and Encarnacion's an idiot. Like, I mean, there's two bench-clearing brawls, and why are there brawls? Or why they weren't brawls. Why did the benches empty? It emptied because he came down and yelled at Encarnacion, who was trying to, at least from my vantage point, was trying to tell the people to shut up and quit throwing stuff. And then he goes and whacks Tulowitzki on the bum. Well, I'd never seen that before, ever. And then he's surprised that Tulowitzki says, get your hands off me.
It really just sounded like everyone in the crowd just had one too many diet sodas, eh, Bob?
Yeah.
Speaking of beer and pandemonium and all that, what was going on in Baltimore, Bob, when Batista and them were pouring beer on your head and everything? I saw a couple pictures floating around.
No, that wasn't in Baltimore. That was here. That was the day they clinched
the playoff spot, no?
The playoff spot on the Saturday, and I was talking to Martin, and they're acting like a bunch of five-year-olds, and Martin says, what's the big deal? I said, I don't know. He said, do you need me? And I said, no, I don't need you. And he said, well, I'm out of here, and he was gone, like 5 minutes after the doors opened. And so then Hawkins was there, Latroy Hawkins, I said, how many of these have you been through? And so he figured it up, and it was 11. And I think when I got upstairs, I figured out Martin had been through like 7 or 8. But usually it's like when you win to go on, or, you know, you win the division. Well, these guys, all they'd done is clinch the second wild card, which they actually did before they got on the field. And they didn't even cover the lockers because there wasn't going to be any celebration. But they just... They just went crazy. So Hawkins says, they must have got you wet a lot of times. I said, no, I said, I never really got wet in 92 or 93 or 87 or 85 or 89. I said, but I was standing in Baltimore in 96, and Jimmy Key came up, and I said, you got a second? He said, yeah, just a second. And then he came up, and he said, who's that over there? And I turned, and he stuck the neck of the champagne bottle down my back with the thumb on it. And then he took the top off, his thumb off it, and the cold champagne went right down my back. That's the only time anybody ever got me. So, anyways, I was talking to Saunders 5 minutes later, and then Edwin comes up, and Encarnacion comes up, and he asked me something. And then all of a sudden it was Edwin and Batista. And the Japanese guy, the TV guy from Japan, showed me this thing. He videotaped it. And Kawasaki was in there.
The team mascot?
Yeah, the mascot. And then but Pilar told me in Baltimore, he said he was in on it, which I didn't even see him. But so I get out into the hallway, and somebody flipped a towel at me. And I look up, and here's who's looking at me but Hawkins. I said, that was you. And he said, no, it wasn't. So we got to Baltimore, and he bought me a poncho.
Like a rain poncho.
But I went to the Orioles room first, so I didn't get wet.
Other than Joe Carter's big home run to win the World Series, any other bigger moments than bigger moments than Batista had?
Still think Alomar's home run in '92, which put them up 3-1, a game within the World Series on the Saturday on the Thanksgiving weekend when we were in Oakland. Then, you know, when he threw his arms up in the air and all it did was tie the game, but they won it in extras. I think that's more important. You know, that was, they'd always been, you know, with 85, they lost the final 7 games of 87, 89, 91 they lost. So this one finally got them over the hump, and I think that's the, well, the previous regime, this is the only stadium in baseball that doesn't have a... They have a statue outside, but it's of a businessman. So they were supposed to put Alomar's picture out there, a statue outside with his arms in the air after he hit the home run for the 40th anniversary next year. But I don't know whether that will continue under the new regime. But I would say Alomar's would be second to Carter's, and then... And then I guess Batista's because it won it. And then I think Sprague's in game 2, a pinch hit home run off Reardon because they would have come home from Atlanta down 2-0. Instead, they come home tied 1-1. Yeah.
You sound pretty close with Russell Martin and Saunders and all the Canadian guys. What was it like for them being at home, kind of at home in Canada here, seeing the country not only come together, but playing for their country in a sense?
Saunders, I was surprised he'd never ever won anything, so he was not even in the minors, so he was very into it. And Martin, that first celebration, he wasn't into. But I'll tell you, Martin was certainly into it when, but remember, because they scored the lead run after he hit the ball, after he hit Cho on the throwback to the pitcher.
Yep.
But when Batista hit the home run, I don't think anybody in the, like, he was happier than anybody in the 200, the 500, or anybody. Martin was the most, you know, because what a way that would have been to have lost.
Yeah, it would have been horrendous for him, especially being Canadian.
Yeah.
Is there any other stories that's really stood out to you from this playoff run at all that you could share?
Osuna, somebody made him a poncho. And it was Blue Jay colors, and it had the Mexican flag on it. So I don't know. It wound up being in his locker, and I think they put his name on it. And he came over and thanked me for it. Like, I had nothing to do with it. I don't know where he, you know, like kids, they get, he's only 20. I don't know if somebody might have said, oh, it came from that guy over there, and there's like 200 people in the room, and he thought it was me, but I don't know. I said, no, I didn't send it to you. And then he thanked me again when we got to Kansas City. I said, I didn't
I didn't have anything to do with it, you know.
What about Stroman? He was he seemed pretty excited after everything he did this playoff run.
Yeah, Stroman. I don't think Stroman's ever had a bad day at the ballpark. I mean, obviously he did in spring training when he tore the ACL, but he'd be their number one going into next year, and he's a guy that I think they can count on. You know, there used to be a saying in baseball, you don't trust a short right-hander. Well, he's the exception to the rule. Or don't depend on a short right-hander because they don't really last.
Well, I'm kind of surprised you said he'd be the number one heading into next year. So I get the vibe this offseason is going to be rather quiet.
I think if they're going to cut their payroll, I think not by a lot, but maybe $15 million or something. I think Stroman's their guy. I think.
So I guess that would put them at like what, $130 million next year? I've seen Davidi say 140.
I think they started at 125 and they finished at 139. I think. I don't have it in front of me, but they'd probably be down about 10 or 15 from that. I'm just going off the top. I don't think I know. I heard earlier on the Fan that it was going to go to 100. I don't think that's right.
And yeah, McCann said that
somewhere else that it was going to be stay exactly the same. Well, that's not right. I've been told it's going to. But the thing is, here's the thing: we're not going to know until July 31st. The reason he was able to pull off all those moves was because he sandbagged on his money. You know, he didn't spend it. And, I mean, Reyes Tulowitzki was a wash. They actually saved money, but they added $7 million on Price. They added, I think they only spent $100,000 on Revere. Philly paid most of it. And then Mark Lowe, he was making $750,000, so they paid one-third of that. That's nothing for a major league team. And who else did they add? Who am I missing? Tulowitzki, Price, Lowe, Revere.
They had Hawkins, too.
Hawkins. I think Hawkins was like 2.5 or something, so one-third of that.
And then Pennington was cheap when they picked him up.
Yeah, the guy they got from the Cubs at the last minute. Yeah,
oh, Darwin Burney?
Burney.
What was it like seeing him pitch in a game, Pennington? The only guy ever to throw 90 miles an hour positional player on the mound.
Yeah, that was not a proud moment in franchise. that's a knuckleball. It's like very, very good or very, very bad, and it was terrible that day, so...
If you're the GM of this team going into this offseason, how would you turn this team into a World Series caliber team?
Well, I'd re-sign David Price, but I don't think they've got the money to do that.
I'm pretty surprised they're not going to spend at all to go sign a Price.
Well, the thing is, they made what was the number Simmons hit? Was it 48 or 52 million or something like what they had in added revenue from August, September, and October? And that's not counting next year. But so, you know, a lot of people have said, the number is bang on, but a lot of people have said, well, that gives them more money to carry over in the next year. But somebody explained it to me, the way it works in a publicly traded company is that, okay, there's a $50 million windfall for this year. Fine, perfect. That goes back to the shareholders. There's no carryover here.
Wow, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. That's what wiser guys than I mean I don't know I would probably I can't do my expense account, but this is what an accountant told me. He said people that are writing and saying that they can take the money and flop it into next year, that's not the way it works. They can spend more money on their budget, but they have to give that to the shareholders because it's publicly traded. And you know, there's a guy in Vancouver, and there's a guy down east, and there's a bunch of people in Toronto. They've all got shares. They want money. They want return on their dividend, you know, and the Rogers, whatever the initials on the stock market is, you know.
So how does Tony LaCava fit into all this then? I mean, it's got to be tough for him to manage, I guess, manage his team with tight funds like that. And I saw today you said that Ross Atkins was a possible candidate as well. He's been with Cleveland for, what, 15 years now?
Yeah, he's been there quite a while, and the other guy is Josh Burns, who's a possibility. But I think Shapiro is very smart. The press conference, he came in and he said, Gibbons is staying, the coaches are staying, and LaCava's the interim general manager. And I sent LaCava a note. I was still in New York, but I sent him a note. Did you see a picture of him, the sweater he was wearing?
No, I didn't see it.
He had a pullover, it looked like. He didn't have a sports coat on or anything. I said, I hope that sweater's interim, you know.
What'd he say?
Ha ha, you know. No, I've known him since '99. He used to scout for the Expos. Yep. He used to come. I remember I met him. He was down at that place in Etobicoke. He was looking at Thorman, Scott Thorman, who went in the first round of the Braves.
LeCobb has kind of been Anthopoulos' right-hand man for a while. With him kind of scouting guys like Sanchez, Osuna, and even Hendricks, could you see them converting one of them into a starter next year?
Well, Tinish is the one. Andrew Tinish is the one who drafted Sanchez, Syndergaard, and those guys. But Tony certainly deserves the credit for he was involved in Hendricks, like when they signed him as a who was the third guy you mentioned? Hendricks, Sanchez,
and Osuna.
Osuna. He was involved in that, but Ismael Cruz was the main guy. Yeah, I could see them. It's a strange thing is Sanchez wants to start and Osuna does not. So
really.
Well, yeah, I mean, the money, if you're trying to make any money, it's as a starter. I don't blame Sanchez for wanting to be a starter, and they certainly have a need, but Osuna's a strange one. He wants to stay at the back end. He wants to be a closer.
Did he say why?
Just because he likes it, you know. The thing is, I guess he really hasn't known anything else in the big leagues. I mean, when you think of it, like a year ago, when they opened in April, they opened Yankee Stadium. The year before that, him and his name Castro, they were sitting in Dunedin waiting to be assigned to Vancouver until waiting for it to start in June. He was coming off the Tommy John. So,
do you think the fact that Osuna doesn't want to start probably has a lot to do with the fact that as a younger guy, I'm sure it can be tough in the majors to try and stay focused every single day when you're not playing. And the fact that being this closer, he does get an opportunity to go out there and play every single day, and he gets to really be in the zone and focus. Do you think for a guy at 20 years old that might be something that's a little bit more exciting to him as opposed to having to get ready every 5 days? Or do you think that has anything to do with it at all?
No, that could be it. I'm not really, like I said, I'm not really sure why he prefers it. But that's, I know there's guys that, like Paul Quantrill was like that. He wanted to be, he wanted to contribute every day as opposed to pitching and then waiting for 4 days, you know. He was a starter his first year here, and then he went back to the bullpen, and he'd pitch like 8 days out of 10. He was a rubber arm guy. But I'm not really sure what will happen when Osuna's agent has a talk with him and says, look, this is where the money is, kiddo. This is the path we're going down. You know, it'll all depend on what they come up with between now and opening day, you know, or now and reporting date, I guess, Dunedin.
Speaking of young bucks, have you got a chance to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at all?
No, I haven't seen him, no. No, I haven't seen him. I guess he's playing third base, and they're very happy with his progress.
Yeah, he's a big kid. They say he's bigger than Vladdy, his dad, already.
Yeah. I guess his first or second time there, he said he spoke. He said somebody asked how good he was, and he said compared to his father, he said, "Oh, I'm better than him."
He's pretty confident
at
age
16.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I'm sure his dad got a good laugh out of that one too.
Yeah.
I was going to play a little game here with you, Bob, when we were mentioning earlier about 0 to 10. So we'll run through a list of free agents, and 10 being the highest of them possibly coming to Toronto, and 0 being not a chance at all. And you can feel free to add a line as to why or why not. So we're going to start with some starting pitchers here. Some of them are probably zeros, but I'm going to throw them out there anyways. Zach Greinke.
I think that's probably about a 2.
David Price?
Probably about a 1.
Wow,
I think they aren't going to spend the money. Mm. I'd be very surprised. Like I said earlier, that's the one I would go and get. They spent all that. They made all that money, so why not go and spend some?
Where do you think Price ends up? Somewhere like the Giants or the Dodgers?
The Cubs? I thought all along he'd go with the Cubs and be with Madden. See, he's a Tennessee kid. He's not a West Coast guy or an East Coast guy. So I guess the choice of the day nowadays for American League pitchers is to go to the National League. So their numbers are better, and they only face 8 hitters for the first 2 times through the order. So
and he can hit, too, since he likes to hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess that rules out Jordan Zimmermann, eh?
I haven't heard the price numbers on him. The amount on him. I don't know how high. He'd certainly be less than Greinke or Price. So
they said he was asking for anywhere from 18 to 22 million. They didn't
for
say
how
term
many
though. Yeah, I didn't get any report on a term, but they said
see,
that's the
thing is, the thing is, Estrada might be a little bit high, you know, 13.
Yeah.
But the term is good. It's 2 years. So now I remember when Gillick was here, Gillick used to say, you sign a pitcher for 3 years, you're lucky to get 2 years out of him. And you should be happy to get 2 years out of him. So, I mean, like 3 or 4 years ago there when the Angels signed Pujols for 10 years and Fielder went to Texas for 10 years. Like, what do you expect to get out of that?
Yeah.
Like, seven, six? I don't know.
So what was Gillick, what did he mean by if you get 2 years out of it?
He meant that the guys, that they're going to break down, they're going to get hurt, just like Eric Hansen did, although that wasn't him. Just like Cottle broke down, trying to think. You know, the thing is, they're like thoroughbred racehorses, and they, a lot of two-year-old thoroughbred racehorses, and a lot of them make it to the three-year-old season. A lot of them miss time because they're on the disabled list or spending time with the blacksmith, you know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I got three other pitchers that I'd ask you about. An old one that they used to always link to the Jays was Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah, I'd say about a week ago I might have said a 6 or 7, but now I think I'd say about a 4, maybe.
How come the interest has lulled down?
I heard they didn't like him, so.
Wow.
Who in particular didn't like him?
Some people with the Blue Jays. Now, that was, I don't know if Shapiro likes him. That was the old people in the old regime, you know. Like, I don't know if there's some people still there, but I don't know if like who has the final say. I think I know who has the final say, but I don't know Shapiro's opinion.
What about a guy like Doug Fister, kind of a bounce-back guy? Shapiro always was kind of fond of him and his analytics when he was in Detroit.
Yeah, that guy'd probably be, I think we're going to give the highest mark there. They're probably a 6, I guess.
6, okay. And I guess a guy like Ibukuma would be probably on the low end as well?
Yeah, I don't
know.
Old,
injured.
I don't know. I mean, 2 years ago, he was outstanding. I remember he pitched against Toronto, and I think he pitched 8 scoreless out there. I was out there for the, it was the night, I flew out the night they played that 19-inning game against Detroit.
Yep.
And I was finished, I wrote about Jose Abreu, and I finished, and I saw Toronto was in, you know, with a 3-hour time difference. And so I remember phoning the Skydome and asking Mike, our other guy, I said, so how was your day? And it was only the 17th, and I was done.
Was that Rutsy?
Yeah, I was just teasing him.
Hey, this is his last season, eh? He retired?
Yeah, he was walking around. He was done as soon as Toronto was done, so when it got to 2-0 Texas, he was walking around holding up 1. You know, my magic number is 1. I've only got 1 more loss, and then I'm done. And then, so then they won, and then he's walking around holding up 4, and then it was 3-2. And yeah, he's a good fellow. He's going to golf and tour the world with his wife.
Good for him. What about the bullpen here? What about a guy like Antonio Bastardo, a lefty? Gillick had him for a little while.
Yeah.
Kind of expensive?
They certainly have a need there, the bullpen. I mean, Loop was not... The Loop this year was not the Loop of the past 2 years or 3 years. And Cecil was a failure as a closer, but what did he finish? 31 or 32 or 33 scoreless outings? And, you know, they really missed him when he picked off Napoli, and then he got over and he tore his calf. So
yeah, he was their best relief pitcher from July on, I'd say.
Yeah.
What do you? He had 26 and a third scoreless, I think, you threw consecutively.
Yeah. Osuna ran out. You know, if you look up the home runs the first 3 months or 4 months, and then the last 2 months, you know.
What about a guy like Mark Lowe? You think he'll come back? I know he's a comedian in the locker room, I was told.
Yeah, he is. They think he's out of their price range. That's the last
really?
Time I heard his name. That was in Kansas City, I think.
Did they say how much he was going to command?
No, they didn't. They didn't say. Here's the guy. He was on a split contract. He's the guy that gave up the home run to David Freese in St. Louis when he was with Texas, and shuttled around. And then, you know, last year he started out at Tacoma, and he didn't get. Excuse me, called up to the big leagues till, I don't know, May 5th or something.
Yeah, it was a while, and then he ended up, they said he was going to lose his job to Danny Farker and a couple other guys out there in Seattle.
Yeah.
What about in the infield? I know people are saying they might have a need at first base. Any shot a guy like Chris Davis, you even think Crush Davis is worth them throwing a contract at? I think he's going to want too much. I heard they want to eventually transition Bautista to first base.
I don't know about that. He's only got the 1 year left for sure, so... I mean, he could play there, but I like Davis as a player. I think he would be a big addition if you had enough money once you solve the pitching. And the thing about Davis, he's represented by Boris, which I think Boris...
It's been a no-no for the Jays.
Yeah, well, it was a no-no for the Jays under Beeston, and I think arguably Boris represented two of the greatest Blue Jays ever in Delgado and Alomar, and they fired him. They both fired him. So I think he had Bill Risley, and then I don't think he's had anybody since Alomar's first year. And he had the one kid that they drafted the one year, and Paxton.
Yeah, Paxton.
And they didn't sign him. So I mean, I don't even know why they go near the guy. You know, when they knew at the All-Star game the year before it was who had Paxton.
So what about a guy like Justin Morneau? You think he would come to Toronto?
Oh, he'd come to Toronto in a heartbeat. Yep, he'd pay his own flight. Yep.
What do you think the chances are of them offering him? If you had to go 0 to 10, what would you say? Maybe like a 5?
Well, I think I'd rather have him than Smoke.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a better defender too.
Yeah, and Encarnacion is not a good defender.
Even Colabello, he's not really a first baseman.
He doesn't want to be. Encarnacion doesn't want to be. Well, let me think. Colabello is right-handed, Morneau is left-handed. Yeah, that'll work. Yeah.
Because the only other lefty they have is Matt Haig, and the Hanshin Tigers or whatever in Japan, they offered him a contract.
Yeah.
Apparently they're close to getting him. Any truth to that, or is that just the... I saw that on Yahoo, they reported that.
I hadn't heard that one, Cleve. You're ahead of me on the Mississauga North and the Hanshin Tigers.
Yeah, that's all the names I was going to ask you about that. Is there anybody else you could think of?
Or anybody that you'd go after?
I could see them, you know, just like it doesn't matter what the organization is, like whether the guy leaves Detroit and goes to Philly or the guy, I saw it the other day, DePoto left the Angels, went to Seattle, they made a trade with the Angels. I can see, I'll bet you they, either his first, second, or third trade is with Cleveland to get some kid that he likes and the other guys don't like.
I wish it was Corey Kluber, but it won't be.
No, I don't think it will be.
Carrasco was being thrown around a lot.
Well, that was a good story, I think it was about 5 days before I found out that Cleveland said no to Pompey, Norris, and I forget who the third one was, Hoffman. So the point was, if they were to offer those three guys for Carrasco, they would offer them to other teams. And that's exactly what happened. They didn't trade Pompey, but they traded two of the three. That was the indication that they were certainly going to go for it. But I don't know why would Alex Anthopoulos and Beeston sell the farm if, like, I'm sure Anthopoulos thought he was coming back on, like, Shapiro wasn't hired until August 31st. And the trades were made in July, you know, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
That other story? I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I'll try and dig it up for you and send you the link, because when I read that, I was like, it doesn't make any sense, because they were also implying that Anthopoulos might have been a lame duck. But Shapiro didn't really take over until the end of August, like you were saying.
Well, how could he be a lame duck if he traded for Price and...
Yeah, exactly.
quack.
It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
That kind of came out when the whole scolding report came out. What did you make of that?
Scolding report?
When they said Shapiro scolded Anthopoulos.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, well, there's something to that. I don't know if he's... No, I don't know. I think scolding is a little strong, but that's accurate from what I've heard, that he didn't like the Price trade, and he didn't like... that's accurate, that there was some friction from day one, and I think it was about September 5th in a meeting, but I was told scolding is too strong a term, but they didn't hit it off. Obviously, they didn't hit it off, or the guy wouldn't have left $10 million on the table, you know.
Yeah, I heard they had philosophical differences where Shapiro likes to kind of build and sign guys long-term within the organization, and Anthopoulos is kind of, we're just going to go out there and get guys and win no matter what it takes.
Well, that was the case last year, you know.
Yeah, because he built up all this prospect depth that they've had. That wasn't just an accident. I mean, that was years of him...
Yeah.
Getting these guys.
You know, you remember they had those, like, they trade for, or they claim Miguel Olivo and then let him go 3 days later or something.
Yeah.
And they get the draft pick. And then who else? There was, like, three extra picks they got.
So Nate wants to play a little game here with you, a little funny game he says he's got.
It's just a little funny game. So I'm going to give you two guys, their names, and I'm going to describe what they look like. And you got to tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how accurate it is.
You're going to give me two names.
Yep, two names.
And tell me what they look like.
Right. And like just a funny way of what they look like. And then you got to tell me how accurate it is from 1 to 10.
Okay.
So the first name is Terry Collins. Terry Collins looks like a guest character on Golden Girls that shows up to take Blanche on a date.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the second one is Bartolo Colon looks like the last Mohican who ate the second last Mohican.
I think Bartolo wins with a 9, and the other Terry Collins would be about an 8. I think I saw him on that show with Betty White.
All right, pretty good.
You guys got anything else you want to ask, Bob?
No, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Bob, it's been, I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, I learned so much just in this last half hour that we had.
So there's nothing else you guys want to ask, Bob?
No, we're good. Thanks a lot, Bob, for taking the time. It's much appreciated, and we hope to have you on at some point soon.
All right, boys.
And that was, of course, Hall of Fame sports writer Bob Elliott. A lot of stuff to cover there.
Wow.
Just, yeah, honestly.
I'm mind blown. That was great.
Honestly, the one thing that I'll take away from him is a guy who's been around in the organization since its inception almost 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
To say to us that he's never seen anything that crazy before, like that seventh inning in the ALDS game 5, to see the fans react the way that they did, to see the way that the tide turned in our favor after what seemed to be yet another Toronto sports curse taking a hold of us. For him to even stand up and say, I've never even witnessed anything like that before, really, really says something to a history-making moment that it was.
Right, because, you know, he's seen it all. Everything you could possibly see in a Blue Jays uniform, he's seen it. And he said that seventh inning was, you know, one of a kind. And, you know, I was actually at the game, and the whole time I kept thinking to myself, wow, is this really happening? It didn't seem real. Like,
it was,
you know,
raining Budweiser.
Budweiser. Kids were getting hit. Popcorn was getting thrown. The squad team was out on the field. It was incredible, man. And then the turn of events was the Batista hitting that home run was just, you know, something just out of a movie. And they always say real life is crazier than anything in the movies. And
I agree.
It was true that night.
Yes, it was.
What did you have to say about free agency and David Price likely not coming back?
Yeah,
that hurt my heart.
Yeah.
I wanted to cry.
That's one thing I wanted to choke back. I want to see him back. That's a bona fide ace, you know, shutdown guy, you know, one of the top 5 pitchers in all of Major League Baseball, and I would love to see him back, but you know, he has better sources than I do, obviously, and he says he's not coming back. And that's a tough one. You know, what do you think about that?
Tough pill to swallow.
It was a tough pill to swallow. I can't say I'm too surprised because of the money.
Right.
I was more surprised that he said that they were going to kind of reduce payroll to start.
Yeah.
That's not definitive,
right? What's
up
with that?
It kind of gives him some flexibility going to the July 31st deadline for next year. But to be honest with you,
reducing payroll, though, is that because David Price is coming
off? It's not a finalized payroll, right? It's
right.
Very fluid still, like
right.
He was saying.
So if they don't resign David Price, obviously the payroll is obviously reduced, but
yeah.
Are they... Like what?
I guess it's kind of subtraction based off not re-signing a guy, but
yeah.
It kind of sounds like they're being cheap,
right?
Yeah. In my opinion,
I was shocked that the money that we made off of the playoff run pretty much goes to all the investors.
Yeah,
club.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know it was as corporate as it was. We always say it's corporate, right? But I didn't know that there was that much kind of a hierarchy or a pecking order to go through. That basically
everybody's
got to
eat.
Yeah.
Everybody got to eat.
Yeah, really.
No, I just thought. You know, you make that money for the team. You know, they kind of just put it back into...
The fans lose in Toronto all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's just absorbed back into the bigger machine that is Rogers, which is why this front office will forever scare me.
So, and he did kind of have some breaking news about pitching. I know you asked him about, you know, who's going to be in the rotation, and he kind of said that Aaron Sanchez wants to be in the rotation
because
that's where the money is.
Yeah.
But... Osuna wants to stay in the bullpen. I thought that was really interesting.
Especially for a 21-year-old.
Right. I thought that was really interesting.
I thought it was too, because I guess now we kind of know what the closing situation is going to be
for
next year.
To me, if a guy wants to be in the bullpen, wants to be a closer, I say you leave him there because that's where he's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sports is all about comfort. And if a guy is comfortable in one role, you want to leave him there because I've seen a lot of times when, you try to, you know, people try to project stuff on guys like, oh, he's a great closer, so he'd be a great starting pitcher.
Yeah.
But if a guy's not comfortable in that role, he's not going to succeed at it. I've seen it.
I think, though, to Bob's point, which I think we all here found very interesting, was the fact that I'm sure his agent is going to explain to him the importance of being able to be a starter as opposed to being over a closer in the league.
Right.
Because, and this is to a point that he was kind of touching on, but I think it's one that we can all acknowledge, is the fact that starters in Major League Baseball are always going to be given 5 or 10 times the chances that a closer would get if you blow up or you have a bad season.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I think his agent would protect him and try and convince him to say that he wants to be a starter despite how much Osuna may want to be in that role as a closer.
Right.
Like, a closer is a position that you are put in after you didn't make it as a starter.
Right, right.
And the reason for that is because it's such a cutthroat position on the team. If you have a couple of bad games in a row, you can get outright released. Forget put on the bench. You can get straight released if you're not producing well enough. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but that's what it seems like it might be.
Well, they're really high on Osuna. You know, he's still really young, right? So
I don't think he'll reach that point quite yet.
But it's just really interesting for, you know, it's almost like, do you want to start or do you want to come off the bench? And, you know, maybe he's a better guy coming off the bench. You see you see it all the time in the NBA. Guys are better coming off the bench. Like, you know,
Sweet Lou.
Yeah, like Lou Williams. You put him in the starting lineup, he's just not quite the same. But on the bench, he thrives.
Yep.
Maybe like a guy like Swaggy P, he comes in. Manu Ginobili's kind of thriving that role, you know, coming off the bench.
It's extended his career.
Exactly. So you see it all the time. Guys get comfortable in roles and they thrive, and you try to put something else on them and, you know, they'll do as well. But, you know, I'm excited. Nevertheless, I'm excited about this team.
Yep.
I mean, you know, they're going to be changes, obviously, but they're going to have – I was thinking about this. They're going to have that stacked lineup for a 162-game season opposed to just half a season, mm-hmm. right? And you see what they did in that half a season. Like, they tore the MLB apart. The most notable people in the MLB, the best writers, they're saying the Blue Jays are the best team. So now they're going to have all those guys for the whole season, maybe lose Price, but majority of the team is going to be there for the whole season.
But we will have Stroman back now for a full season if he stays
exactly.
healthy.
Are they, like, what do you see happening with this team next year, Chris?
I think they're going to be kind of similar to what we saw at the end of the year.
Right. For a full year, they were 50 and 51 at the trade deadline?
Yeah, so, it's a 162-game season. You're not going to go anywhere unless you have 5-6 pitchers, right?
Right, okay.
You can mash the ball all you like, but their numbers, too, were a little inflated at times last year because nobody scored 8 or more runs in one single game than the Blue Jays did. They did it over 12 times last year.
Right.
So that kind of inflates your stats because you're having these monstrous nights.
Yeah, right.
I'm not trying to take away from the offense here. It's going to mash the ball.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, when you're a hitting team, there's highs and there's lows. When you're really high, you're going to have these ridiculous mm-hmm. months. And when you're low, you're going to have slumps. That's where the pitching has to come in.
Absolutely. Is their pitching staff better now than last year, say, for the first half of the season?
Oh, you can't compare the first half. Look at the second half. That's what carried this team to the playoffs. The best ERA in all of baseball was the Jays.
I'm just saying the pitching staff is going to be more similar to like how it is now. Because, you know, we might... Well, No, we're losing Price, right?
What's
the pitching staff looking like right now? You got number one is Stroman. He said Stroman's going to be number one guy.
Yeah.
Who's number two right now?
Estrada.
Who's number three? Dickey. Four? Hutchinson.
This is where it starts getting iffy. Yeah. I think, like he was saying...
Sanchez, Hutchinson.
Yeah, one of those two. And then I think those two will fight for the fifth spot. And
Sanchez
like Bob
and
was
Hutchinson?
Saying, I think they're going to take a run at somebody.
Okay.
Albeit Doug Fister.
Okay.
Or
so their pitching staff projective is going to be better for next year.
I think it'll be about the same.
About the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
About the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I couldn't see it being better or worse right now because you don't know what the back half of that rotation is going to be.
That's true. But if you're projecting it, I'm saying.
If we're going to go off projections and Sanchez pans out to be what everybody projected him to be, then it'll be better.
Right.
Because he has the capability of being an ace.
So that's what I'm saying, though. So with that being said, can you expect a better team overall?
I honestly think they're going to be about the same right now.
Okay.
Because you got to take into account the rest of the division is going to get better.
Really, though? Like,
why wouldn't they get better? Why wouldn't a Boston get better? That farm system is
Boston might
loaded.
Get better. It is loaded, and Boston might get better.
Prospects are capital in the baseball world. You can use them.
I still think the
players.
Blue Jays are significantly better than all those teams in that division.
Yeah. Let's say though that they crushed the Yankees this year.
Are getting older.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you take away three of those wins, that's a big difference in the race.
Mm.
that's a lot closer of a race now if three of those games swing the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's just,
and New York was New York was in the hunt right to the end, even made the damn wild card.
It did, and but
with
they,
no, with
they had like, career years from guys that didn't expect. You know what I mean? That's not happening again.
Like, and that's the thing, though. Nobody expected them to do well. And look, you could also look at the other end of the spectrum. Look at Washington; they were pegged as World Series favorites and just completely imploded the entire season right before our eyes. So. Yeah. You know, you really don't know. Baseball, you know, to both your points, you know, it's a 162-game season. For us, it's murky after the third starter, and we don't specifically know. We can hope for the best. We can hope that this team has enough offensive power to carry them through, but, like, to Chris's point, they're going to struggle at times, and it's really going to come down to the pitching, and it's, you know, it's kind of sad to say that it could all be determined by three or four guys, even though we have so many talented bodies in the starting lineup alone.
Right. You can't project health either, right?
You
guys
can't,
get
you
hurt.
Can't, you can't.
Things happen.
For sure. Yeah. But I'm saying as of right now, for the whole 162-game season.
It's a 90-win team on paper.
90, yeah. It might be more.
I mean, look at the Yankees. I'll give you an example of the Yankees. The Yankees, sorry to interrupt, Mate. But
no worries.
The reason, look at the Yankees. They signed in the last three or four years. What was their biggest signing? Masahiro Tanaka, right?
Right.
This guy's missed half of his time he spent in New York.
Right.
To play to the idea of injuries. Injuries can determine everything with that. But
I understand what you're saying. Injuries can determine everything, and that's the big unknown in sports, injuries. You can't plan for it.
I just hate Rogers right now.
you can't plan for injuries. You know, you can't. There's nothing you can do about injuries, but just have a good roster and hope the next man steps up. Yeah, and that's something that the Blue Jays are building. I mean, they have a good roster, you know. They're really deep. I mean, offensively, if someone gets hurt, we all know the lineup's deep, so you know they can survive that. I don't know about the pitching staff, but
the best thing they did
every
to
team.
Help the pitching staff was the defense, though.
Right.
Getting a guy like Tulowitzki wasn't all about at the dish.
Right.
The runs he saves and having a full season of him when he is playing at the top of his game.
Right. Absolutely.
He's not only the best shortstop in baseball.
Right.
He's one of the best players in baseball,
right.
Defensively, offensively, and. Look at the effect he had on guys like Ryan Goins.
Mm-hmm.
Goins
he
really
stepped his game
him.
Up.
Yeah, because he's learning from a all-around pro.
Home runs.
Right.
It's different when you got a
bat
picked professional.
Up. Right.
Yeah, a guy like Tulowitzki is going to have a massive effect in the clubhouse.
I would love to see Justin Morneau at first base.
Yeah, like Bob was
Talk
saying that he would pay for his ticket
defense,
to come here.
Right.
I'd love to see that.
Talk about another upgrade on defense and, you know, whatever he has left
another
in the back. Right.
He's a lefty, too.
He's a lefty, yeah.
He gives some good balance to the lineup.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that would be interesting.
It'll be very interesting moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And with a team that's loaded with a whole bunch of studs, we thought it'd be kind of fun to transition into our next game that we decided to make up this week, courtesy of Mate.
Yep.
That's right, Chris. The next segment here is actually a creation of Mate's. He's been excited about this.
Let's go!
All night. All night. So, Mate, please break it down for us. What exactly is Studs and Duds?
Okay, the next segment we got going is Studs and Duds. And we take the stud of the week and the dud of the week. Like Ryan was saying before, you can hear the background music, imaginary players. Are you an imaginary player or are you a real gangster?
Mate,
are you a stud or are you a dud? we're about to find out.
All right, bro. Lead it off.
Okay, I'm batting lead off. Ben Revere, we're ready to go. My stud of the week is none other than Steph the Chef Curry. Compared to Michael Jordan's first 10 games of his 95-96 season, he's averaging more in points, rebounds, and assists. And don't forget shooting percentage. Even last week, a soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Kevin Garnett, compared him to MJ, the GOAT. Steph Curry is my stud of the week. Chef Curry with the shot, boy. My dud of the week is a fan of the Green Bay Packers game. As you heard Aaron Rodgers roast him, he brought out anti-Muslim remarks, and that's uncalled for me. He's definitely my dud. You can't bring stuff like that into sporting events. You know, people go to sporting events to get away from everyday life. They go to get entertainment. They go to see, you know, the best athletes in the world compete. And, you know, stuff like that, it's ignorant stuff like that is just uncalled for and just not to be accepted. And I'm happy that Aaron Rodgers spoke up and, you know, said it was not to be tolerated. And,
yep, absolutely.
And you know, even regardless of the score of the game, that's unacceptable. So that dude, whoever he is, he knows he's a dud.
Coming straight from the anti-bully ambassador, Argos wide receiver Mate J. All right, well, my dud of the week is, unfortunately, an amazing quarterback throughout his entire career, but he actually cost me my fantasy game by 0.2 points. So
how does that happen?
He put up a negative 6. That's how that happened. Even if he had just not played, I would have won. If he had just not played, if he just went down with an injury, I would have won the game. At any rate, unfortunately, it is Mr. Peyton Manning. Unfortunately, he came down with an injury, so we wish him a speedy recovery. And, you know, he's still one of the GOATs. Hopefully he gets better soon. Now, my stud of the week is actually a guy who faced a lot of heat getting drafted by a certain organization that takes a lot of its fans suffer through a lot of the same kind of heartache as Leaf fans here in Toronto. And those are New York Knicks fans. They got the same terrible ownership, not terrible ownership, but got the same incompetent ownership that's incapable of being able to put together a winner. And however, this young man is setting out to prove all of those fans that were booing him when he got drafted completely wrong, and that is Kristaps Porzingis.
Ooh.
He's averaging nearly a double-double so far this season. But you know what, boys? You want to know why he is a complete and total stud? Why he's my stud? He had cornrows in high school.
Ooh.
Hey, had cornrows in high school, gentlemen?
You know you're a real baller when you got cornrows.
Who had cornrows in high school?
You have the driver's license to prove it, too. That's the best part.
That's right. Who did? Nate? Who had cornrows?
I had cornrows. You already know he's a baller if he had cornrows.
That's
I once I got the cornrows in my hair, though, my game stepped up to another level.
That's right.
Serious.
I had a 1-5 fade.
Oh, man.
Yeah, for me, my dud of the week is Jonathan Bernier. We all saw last night flipping the puck in halfway from center ice. And, yeah, you know, he's one of those squeakers that goes in, and I'm not going to get into too much.
Squeak, squeak.
The man's probably going to be potentially without a job pretty soon. My stud of the week goes back to last Thursday night, Mr. Rex Ryan. Four-letter word, yeah, about 36 times.
Bleep this, bleep yeah, bleep yeah.
Yeah, he goes back into New York, gets a huge win. Sexy Rexy, talking all
wiener.
That jazz. Yeah, he's a big wiener, all right. And the Bills are in sixth position right now in the AFC, and they're about to walk into New England and put up a real good fight and possibly win outright.
Bleep, yeah.
That's right.
Take the points and buy that line tomorrow morning when it opens, guys.
Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to it.
That was
going right ahead.
His studs and dud of the week brought to you by...
Miss AJ.
You real gangsta? Or you a pretender?
And with that, I would like to thank everybody for tuning in to the TOT cast this week. My name is Ryan Greco, and we also have our wonderful and talented co-hosts here, Chris Okranitz and Atea J. You can always reach the show at Tip of the Tower on Twitter. You can also like our Facebook page, Tip of the Tower. If you'd ever want to reach out to myself, you can reach me at Ryan Greco 416. On Twitter, you can reach Nate on Twitter at Tay11_. And of course, you can always follow Chris Okranitz at Chris Okranitz on Twitter. We'd also like to thank the Hall of Famer, Bob Elliott, for taking the time to stop by the TOT cast today. It was an amazing in-depth interview, boys.
Oh, yeah. I learned so much. You know, appreciate you, Bob. You know, gave us the real insight on everything Blue Jays related. And, you know, it was big. You know, learned a lot.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure speaking with Bob. Looking forward to grabbing some diet sodas with him soon and catching up again. So thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It was greatly appreciated.
Lone Star Grill, I got the bill, or at least the first round of drinks.
You do? I'm writing that down.
Well, they already got it on record now, so we'll see you all next week. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and everybody have a fantastic day.